Hail cheaters, and welcome to the Always Cheating Fantasy Premier League podcast. My name is Brandon, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Josh.
Hello, Brandon.
How are you doing today, Josh?
I'm doing well. As presciently predicted in the last podcast, Sergio Aguero has come down with an injury, and I'm actually very excited about this, despite being a Sergio Aguero owner.
It's a strange contrast in moods as we go from the last episode being us all primed on those five goals to immediately being trying to figure out what to do with 4 weeks off. I guess it's going to be 4 weeks off. Is that what they predict?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, you see these like Ben Dinnery tweets and, you know, like all these random people, and no one really knows, right? I mean, like there's really no incentive for the team to release how long he's going to be out for. It's a level two hamstring tear, so probably something like 4 to 6 weeks.
So we're in the midst of an international break, and speaking of Aguero, we are going to, later in the podcast, get to all of the fallout that has resulted from these friendlies, even down to the number of miles traveled by all the key players in the FPL. What else are we going to talk about? We're going to talk about who we're going to replace.
I like that rhetorical. Sorry, go ahead.
We're going to talk about who to replace Aguero with, because we now find ourselves in this situation. And we're also going to preview Game Week 9. So there's lots for us to cover in the coming episode. Are you ready, Josh?
I am. I think I'm more ready than you, actually.
I think so. I'm like frantically looking at my notes that we've actually been preparing all day, but it's like I'm looking at them for the first time. Do you have anything you want to clear up before we actually get started?
Are you asking me if I remember if I remember now who Nigel Clough is?
It's true. I'm talking about Cloughgate.
Yeah. Nigel Clough. I knew was a real person too. He's been a championship manager for many years, or at least he was. Son of the great Brian Clough, of course. So yeah, I forgot. That's all right.
Yeah.
And no one really like gave me too much hell for it. You know, there was some like sort of little teasing that took place, and I think that was justified considering we went on for about like 5 minutes about
if anyone wants to question our Clough bona fides. I do have a autographed copy of The Damned United signed by David Peace, so let that be the
if end. It had been signed by Brian Clough, that would really be incredible.
it truly would have. So speaking of managers, there's been a lot of manager news over the international break, mainly Jurgen Klopp going to Liverpool.
Mm-hmm. I'm very excited about this. Klopp is really when I first was getting into soccer, you know, when I really like when I took it up a notch. It was around 2010, and that was when Borussia Dortmund was just about to were sort of launching into their first title winning campaign under Klopp, and he's so charismatic. Who doesn't love Klopp? Everybody loves him.
There was an interesting article by Brian Phillips on Grantland about Klopp and the Liverpool mentality. I don't know if you read this, but it talked about how everyone loves Klopp because Klopp is like a heavy metal football manager. He likes to have a good time. He's smiling. He's joking. But then you take Liverpool and they have a tendency to be very self-serious and somber. And how are the fans going to react to somebody who is sort of counter to that general mood?
Yeah, I didn't find that very plausible. I don't know. I mean, I think Klopp is not like smiling on the sideline. I mean, he's like famously temperamental, right? So I think if he's cheerful and charming in press conferences, I mean, Kenny Dalglish was like that too. I don't know. I mean, I think it's fine. That's an interesting reading of it, but I don't actually think it's one that is.
It was curveball thinking,
especially valid. Yeah.
So on our Twitter feed at Hail Cheaters, you Josh, you actually posed the question of how many FPL managers out there right now are actually changing their FPL team names to a Klopp based pun.
Uh huh.
And we actually got some really great responses on Twitter from Klopp, which was a favorite of mine. Don't Klopp till you get enough.
Mm-hmm. I changed my team name. You may have seen this.
Did you?
I'm going with Klopp and a half.
Yeah, that resulted from all of our cop puns. RoboClop, Time Klopp. Klopp's filmed on location. And you have to go to our Twitter or go to our blog at alwayscheating.com because a friend of the pod, at SharpieBoy86, made this beautiful Photoshop poster of the movie Kindergarten Klopp. And he actually replaced Arnold Schwarzenegger's head with Klopp's head. And you get all of the peripheral characters of from Liverpool surrounding Klopp in the kindergarten class. It's beautiful.
Yeah, agreed.
All right, and then, of course, Sam Allardyce to Sunderland. Sorry, Bob Bradley. I know you were waiting by your phone for that.
Yeah.
Bob Bradley must have the greatest publicist of all time that his name pops up
was
every
even
time.
Flooded. Yeah, I mean, the Allardyce thing is interesting. I guess we could talk about Klopp. Well, we can talk about him now briefly. So I've read a little bit about...
The floor is yours, Josh.
Yeah, well, he has this you know, pressing, sort of famously pressing style, you know, requires a lot of energy and athleticism to really for it to work. So you know, there's an argument about who's going to be, who, you know, which players are going to benefit from a fantasy perspective, you know, when Klopp, you know, institutes a system. And
sure,
it seems
Benteke
like,
and Sturridge would be the main question marks there.
Right. So the idea is that Jordan Henderson is the one who is going to be the most well served by this when he eventually comes back from his ankle injury. Alberto Moreno apparently is really well suited for this style, as is Daniel Sturridge, actually. It seems like Benteke is the one who is not the ideal fit, one would think, although you'd assume that a manager of Klopp's caliber would be able to find a way to fit Benteke into any formation. So, you know, we'll see how that works out.
Yeah, and thus begins all the rumors about Marco Reus and Robert Lewandowski coming to the Premier League.
Yeah, and of course he said all the right things and says he's not planning to bring any of these Dortmund players over, but, you know, we'll see about that, right? I mean, it seems like it happens every time, so I'd be surprised if we didn't see a couple Dortmunders join the team soon. Nuri Sahin, perhaps?
Or Hummels?
Former Liverpool player.
Now, have you been reading the thousands and thousands of similar articles about the heavy metal football that Big Sam is going to bring to Sunderland and all the players that are going to benefit from that?
Yeah, I mean, it will be interesting to see what happens. I mean, I think it's actually a great hire. I mean, I can see how Sunderland fans wouldn't be excited about this hire, but I actually do think it makes a lot of sense for that team. I mean, the thing is, I mean, his teams didn't actually keep a lot of clean sheets on West Ham, and so there's this idea about him as this, like, really this false idea about him, mostly because he's like a gigantic Englishman, you know, that
sure.
All he does is this sort of like hoof it up, like really, really boring and uninteresting style. And I actually think his teams at West Ham could be, you know, were pretty interesting at times, and, you know, reasonably attack oriented. I mean, you know, it didn't help him that Saka was injured most of last year. They certainly started very strong last year.
Yeah, so. And he brought in some good signings, like Alex Song helped play a more sophisticated style of football through the midfield, that
yeah.
sort of thing.
And one would think that he'd be able to find the right combination to at least get Sunderland to a win at some point.
one can hope.
Yeah, but I think it's really too early to tell.
Well, isn't the Tynwear Derby coming up soon?
Perspective. Yeah, I think it's in 2 weeks.
So all will be known then.
Yeah, they play West Brom away, and then they play Newcastle. So I think it's kind of a wait and see. It would be exciting if somebody really emerged from Sunderland to become a fantasy prospect, because all of the players in that team are so cheap that if he like really cast his lot with Jermaine Defoe or
hey hashtag why not Yedlin.
Yeah, or maybe Patrick Van Aanholt has some more. Who knows, right? Like, but ideally, like, we will get some fantasy prospects out of that team, especially because their value is so low across the board right now.
It's true. There could be some values there. Since we're in the midst of an international break, we have no updates with our public league Hail Cheaters, but we do have a ton of new managers who signed up, and we welcome all of you and looking forward to the next points update. And you can still, of course, join the public league. The auto-join button is on our website at alwayscheating.com or on our Twitter feed. But let's get on to our first segment. Josh, you prepared another amazing spreadsheet for our forward stats. So we can actually crunch these numbers to look at who we're actually going to replace our 13.3 million boy Aguero with. I mean, I assume nobody is going to hang on to him for the duration of this injury. There is a slight temptation, I suppose.
There's a slight temptation, but I think it really doesn't make sense to do that. I mean, especially, I mean, we're thinking at least 4 weeks. That's just way, it's way too long to hold on to a player who makes that much money. We're not talking about a $4.5 million fifth midfielder here.
Yeah, well, I mean, with this kind of money, you can just totally overhaul, be it your midfield or your defense, wherever you have a weak spot, you can fix it now.
It definitely
we're
feels
basically
like
remortgaging our fantasy team right now.
It is. It's like a real be careful what you wish for moment for me, because on the last podcast, as I referenced at the beginning of the podcast, I said that I was really excited about Aguero going down. And I just think that, you know, as somebody who I don't want it to be easy, you know, to me, it's just not fun if for 38 weeks you just put the armband on Aguero every single week. I mean, I just don't know what the fun is in that. I mean, I realize it makes things less stressful or something, but I, you know, to be creative in your captain choice is really, or trying to outwit people with your captain choice is really part of the fun of this game, and where you can really find, you know, find an advantage that you can press. So for me, like, from a fan's point of view, it's too bad that he's gone, because he's a great player to watch. I mean, all you had to see was him score five great goals, against Newcastle 2 weeks ago to really appreciate how much fun he is to have in the Premier League. But from a fantasy perspective, I think it's way more fun to have that 13 million, to get to spread it around. And I mean, this weekend, right? Like, it is incredibly unclear who the captain.
Have you felt this way this international break? If you scour the FPL boards, there's been this tension that's just hanging over everything. And I think what happened in the last game week, everyone felt like balance had been restored. There was an order to things now. Sanchez and Aguero were both fit and operational. Okay, deep sigh of relief. Right. Now, Aguero's gone, and we've got all the other heavy hitters were also off on international duty. So it was like 24-hour injury watch.
Sanchez played 90 minutes despite the Chilean manager admitting that he's still harboring a hamstring injury.
Yeah, and we're recording this before their match on Tuesday night, so we don't even know what the situation is going to be as they play Peru.
Right. So I think, it's really, at least he had the decency to score five goals before he left for a month.
Yeah, I mean, true.
If Aguero had been subbed off at halftime.
Well, just to finish my point, piggybacking on your point that Aguero's injury makes the game more interesting and more creative, it's actually made the international break far more captivating. I mean, the Euro qualifications alone were really exciting.
Do you agree with me, by the way, about the Aguero thing?
I do. I mean, it's hard. I can't see how you could argue against it.
Well, I just mean, you know, I mean, I could see how
one argument against is that the game is better when there is one crazy heavy hitter that can just have those wild swings. And Luis Suarez was the same way. And there, you could look at the other way of the challenge then to the avant-garde FPL manager is, can I do it without this player? Now that's kind of a fool's errand, right?
It just that becomes. I just feel like, I hear what you're saying. I think in that case, it's just one problem, right? The problem is, do you have this player? Do you have Suarez? Do you have Aguero, or don't you? Do you know? Because if you have them, you have to captain them. Basically, they're so expensive usually.
Yeah,
you know that kind of like, you know, mega star supernova type player. Super Saiyan, if you will. The Vegetas of the Fantasy Premier League.
Your Vegetas, your Clint Dempseys, et cetera, so on.
So then the whole season is sort of a referendum on this player, you know? Like, like Robin Van Persie for really two or three years was like this, you know? Like, you just had to deal with the Van Persie question. I mean, I just feel like, you know, it's like last year you had many, many weeks where there was no clear captaincy option. I mean, I was trying to remember last year. It never felt like we even had a real stretch where Aguero was the longer than 5 or 6 weeks, at least, where he was the obvious choice.
Yeah, I think Hazard was, obviously, he was the biggest point getter, but I think he probably held the armband for the longest in most people's squads.
Harry Kane, for a long time, was a real captaincy choice.
Yeah, Diego Costa.
Mm-hmm. There were lots of double game weeks that didn't feature top team. It was just, I felt like last year was really a great year for people who really take the game seriously, because there were expensive players who did well and cheap players who did well. And it was a real challenge to navigate all of that stuff. And so I'm hoping that we start to see more of that this year.
Yeah, Josh, I think we're paying for that year right now.
Yeah, I think you're right.
All right. Let's look at these stats for strikers and who we're going to replace Aguero with.
Yeah, and so for me, and I know both of us have two transfers still to play this week, correct?
I had two free transfers. I've already made one transfer.
Okay, is that Aguero to Pele?
I already had Pele, so that one was all set. So all this discussion about if I wait too long, I'm going to lose a point on Pele and that sort of thing, I've just been putting my feet up on my desk and laughing.
Okay.
My main concern, so I brought in Alexis into my midfield. That was my main concern. That's done.
Okay.
Even though apparently the man's groin is what?
Did you turn Hazard into Alexis? Is that the...
I'll never tell.
Okay.
Right. I mean, you can look at the math in my squad, and that's you'll see how it shook out. So actually, what's interesting about me dropping Hazard and bringing Alexis in is now getting Aguero out, I have a lot more I can do in my midfield.
Right.
Kevin De Bruyne could come in, or any Man City midfielder. I can do all manner of things with my front line.
All right, so are you thinking of possibly burning 4 points this week?
Looks likely.
Yeah. I'm a little undecided. I have two transfers to make. I have Hazard and I have Sanchez already, so that makes it a little bit easier.
The plan
right now is to basically bring in two new strikers. So this was really, it was invaluable to take a look at some of this data. So why don't we jump right into it and we can talk about our teams as we go.
Yeah, I mean, just to put another point on it is when the Aguero injury happened, I was kicking myself for turning Hazard into Alexis because I could have afforded to get Alexis into my midfield and keep Hazard.
Right.
So
right.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So right. I kind of botched
this,
that one.
Yeah. This is
I was playing the price market.
Yeah. Yeah. This is the problem. It's like the price market versus the break. And I'm always willing to wait a week just for that reason, you know?
Right.
Yeah. So anyway.
Okay. So are you on the Pele train now?
Yeah. So this is what was interesting to me is that, you know,
the Pele train, you know, bear with me, everybody.
I have a little bit of anti-Pele bias based on the fact that I had him during the second half last year.
Yeah, he was the first half of the season performer.
Yeah, I mean, I think I got maybe one goal out of him through this 8-week stretch. And I just, you know, the fixtures were good and then I held on too long. It's like the problem we talked about a million times in here about, you know, having, you know, like immediate surgery elsewhere. And so you're stuck to hold on, you know, you're holding on to one of these mid-priced records for longer than you want to.
And Pele is a classic player in that you're like, well, next week is a whole new week.
Yeah, and even now he's only, you know, he's 8.1. I think he was 7.5 at the start of last season. He was either 6.5 or 7.5.
Yeah.
So we pulled together a few different stats, and it was just surprising how far at the, you know, so he's the top-rated striker. In terms of total points on six bonus points, but then even the underlying stats, top of the league in goal attempts, right at the top for passes in the final third, he's a second only to
superb hold up play. He's just serving all of his teammates. So I see that.
Behind only Wayne Rooney, which is not a huge surprise considering how central Rooney is to Man U, even though he's not scoring or
even though he's not anybody.
top of the forward class in touches in the final third. He is second in total passes, right up there with shots on target. So, like, you know, so the points reflect a player who's playing very well, you know, the goals and the assists.
Yeah.
But then the actual the stats, too, also point to a player who's really contributing a lot to the team, doing the kind of things that bring in bonus points. So he's the clear Aguero replacement. And, you know, from there, you know, which is not a huge surprise. I mean, if you're watching the transfer forums, you'll see people talk about this. But I think that when you look at the stats and their fixtures, you know, they have excellent fixtures coming up, too.
Yeah. And so the team is really building momentum, as Pele is building momentum, too. But
yeah, I think if you don't bring in Pele, you're really, you know, I think we're only in week 9. You know, I know that people, like, I'm already seeing a lot of, like, differential talk. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that week 9 is the time when you need to really press your differential advantage. I mean, I think when you have a player whose stats are good, who's, you know, has excellent fixtures coming up,
yeah,
who's in great form, you know, scored again today for Italy, I would just not outthink yourself. I would not outthink myself, and I would just bring in Pele.
Particularly,
I'm not that strong. I like to equivocate a little more on the podcast, but it just seems like it'll come back to haunt us when he has. He is on three yellow cards, so I guess there's a bit of a yellow card,
and he does love a yellow card. But
right. But if anything happens, then you can just you can bring him right over. You can turn him into Lukaku so easily.
Yeah.
As we've talked about before, the fixtures get really good for Everton in a couple of weeks. So even if you only took a 2-week punt on Pele, it'd be worth it.
So
I'm not scared about that Liverpool game in 2 weeks from now.
I feel like I ask this question every week, though. Is it too soon to start bringing in Everton assets? But you bring up Lukaku, and he's priced at 8.3, just 0.2 more expensive than Pele.
Yeah.
Is he the differential then this week?
I think Lukaku would be a fine option too. I am actually thinking about bringing in Pele and Lukaku.
The differential question is interesting too, coming out of this international break, because I feel like the template is sort of resetting a bit.
Yeah.
And instead of bringing in a differential, this is the point in which you try to get in early on what could be a new template, right?
I guess so. I mean, I would never like. Do you think about? I try not to think about templates, though. I think that
I guess template is shorthand for
the best players.
Yes, exactly. Getting the best players before they become full bandwagons.
I think a lot of teams will have Pele and Lukaku certainly starting in week 11.
Yeah.
So the other op. So we have Pele and Lukaku, and then we have there are some more expensive options that are interesting as well. Diego Costa is the obvious one. And the Costa thing is interesting. I mean, the fixtures are pretty good for Chelsea the next couple of weeks. You'd really just be banking on Diego Costa suddenly discovering the form that he had the first 10 weeks of last season.
Right.
It's a huge gamble. And I mean, if you were bringing in Lukaku, you would not be doing it based on what you've seen so far this year. Obviously he's been gone for the last 3 weeks, so it's not, the stats don't help him.
Yeah, the stats are skewed. You can't really trust the stats where that's concerned. Just have to, if you think that Chelsea is going to actually finally kick it into gear, then you get on board. But if you bring in Costa, it's assumed that you're not needing to perform surgery elsewhere in your team because he's priced at 10.9 right now. So
And the advantage there is that if you're somebody who is really concerned about bringing Aguero back the first game he's back, right? Let's say like everything breaks right for him. He's only gone for the next, we're only 4 weeks away from another freaking international break.
I don't know if break right is the correct phrase you want to use in this instance.
if his groin repairs itself quickly, then you have a player
who's hamstring.
His hamstring. It's kind of the same thing, right?
It's all connected. The groin bone's connected to the hamstring bone.
We need to have a doctor on here. We need Dr. James Andrews to come on.
or Dr. Oz, for that matter.
It is easier, obviously, the more expensive your player is. I mean, some people have the self-control to just keep $5 million in their bank. I know that I don't. I know that once I take Aguero out and bring in like an 8.1 million Pele, that $5 million is going elsewhere right away.
It's interesting because I find you'd be very cheap in real life.
I think in general, though, people just overrate how hard.
I seriously do find you to be very cheap in real life.
No, as well you should. People overestimate how hard it is to bring in even a very expensive player. I mean, all it takes is two moves usually.
Yeah.
Even if you need to find $5 million, it's just not that difficult usually to find the money.
Right. Right.
So. So Costa is an interesting option if you want to. That would be the real differential, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
His ownership percentage is not super low, but there's no one who's seriously playing the game right now who has Costa. really, if you're paying attention at all, you don't have Costa, right? Because he hasn't played the last 3 weeks.
Right. Yes. Exactly.
Daniel Sturridge is an interesting option, but
I was actually the other day looking for ways to get Sturridge into my squad. And here's another guy where you can't really read the stats because his playing time has been very sporadic. He did have the one game where he had a brace. And the question is, is Klopp going to bring something else out of him immediately?
Yeah, I just feel like my philosophy certainly the first like 20 weeks of the season is to be fairly cautious. Like, it's not a very sexy strategy, but it's just, you know, bring in the players who are performing well, who have good fixtures and are going to be, you know, like the stats are fairly reliable in terms of, you know, that player who's performing well can be a player who's not scoring goals or having assists, but players whose underlying stats indicate that they should be soon, right? I mean, this is what we saw with Alexis Sanchez before, you know, he finally exploded the last couple weeks, and Aguero last week too. So I think with Sturridge, I mean, the fixtures coming up aren't great. We have a new manager, and it's not clear how he slots into it. He's you know, had a lot of injuries the last, you know, season and a half. It just seems very risky to me to bring in Sturridge at that price. I mean, if he were $8 million, it'd be an easier move. But I mean, at 10.5, you're basically
Look like a total chump if he doesn't produce.
When you have players like Pele and Lukaku, who are even someone like Anthony Martial, who are tearing it up in the $8 million price range, I just don't know why. I mean, if like you didn't know who those players were, you wouldn't pick them up, right? It almost helps to not know the game.
I would be fielding 11 Rudy Gusteds if I didn't know who any of these players were.
So Pele, Lukaku, you know, Martial is an interesting option too.
I mean, he's totally fallen off in the last couple of weeks. I mean, not in any sort of dramatic form. He's gotten his minutes.
The fixtures aren't great for Man United the next 2 weeks. They're away to Everton and home to Man City. But after that, they do lighten up quite a bit. It's Crystal Palace, West Brom, Watford, Leicester, West Ham from 11 to weeks 15. So, you know, if you just want to make the move early, certainly is not impossible that they could, you know, I mean, Martial could score away to Everton and home to Man City. That would not be surprising in either case.
Right.
So I think he's another interesting option. I think a lot. You know, we've skipped over kind of the obvious one here, which is if you haven't brought in Jeremy Vardy yet, he's the other one who's like
Jamie Vardy.
But yeah, did I say Jeremy Vardy?
I don't know. Maybe you had a cookie in your mouth or something.
Anyway, Jamie Vardy is a clear option at 6.7.
He is, absolutely. I think everyone's waiting for that Leicester form to dip, or they expect it to. But
nothing seems unlucky when you look at his stats. I mean, he's second in shots on target. He's second in touches in the final third. He's second in goal attempts. Six, you know, he has tons of, you know, scored 7 goals this year.
Played 90 minutes earlier in the week for England.
Yeah, and both you and I have the same problem, which is that we've loaded up on 3 Leicester players elsewhere, and so neither of us can. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's the Mark Albright effect.
The same problems all the time.
We talk about this too much.
Sako is another interesting option. He's at 6.7. Stats are pretty good for him too. You know, battled injuries a little bit this year, so his stats maybe aren't quite as strong. He's still third in touches in the final third, right up there.
Love that stat, man! Touches in the final third.
It's an interesting indication of how active they are.
Yeah.
At 6.7, you'd have a lot of money to use elsewhere.
What about, okay, so listen, we haven't really even danced around this, but Wilfred Bony, he's the like for like. If you're going to put anyone up front, if you're Pellegrini, it's going to be Wilfred Bony. I don't know what other options he has besides that really young guy whose name totally escapes me, who scored that goal earlier in the season. But
I think that Bony is in the same category where you put Diego Costa and Harry Kane, too, I think, which is that Kane, Bony, and Costa are all players who performed very well last season. Bony before he performed very well at Swansea.
Yeah, he was just true natural goal scorer while he was playing at Swansea.
Yeah, so it's a total fixtures over form thing with Bony. I actually think the Bony is a really interesting option, and he's someone I'm still kind of trying to talk myself into bringing in.
Yeah,
I just don't know if it's really the smart move.
Yes, and a lot of people have recommended just wait for the press conference on Friday from Pellegrini, get the read on him of what he's thinking about playing time and starting roles, and that can be the only starting point in which you think of putting him in your squad. He's got to be a guaranteed start. One would assume he is.
Yeah, one would assume he is. The question there is, you know, if that team, if they don't have Yaya Toure, if they don't have David Silva, if they don't have Sergio Aguero, is that really the same Man City team that we're excited to bring players into?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's you know, Raheem Sterling is a little, you know, I mean, he will create chances, but his form has been kind of hit or miss this year. Obviously, De Bruyne is a really tempting option.
And he, I think he's predicted to have the most points over the next 3 weeks among all FPL players.
Yeah, I would like to bring in De Bruyne. I don't know that it makes sense for me to do it this right now. It's probably not going to happen for me.
Oh, well, interesting. I'm interested to hear about this.
Well, I just don't know how it would work. You know, I'd have to, my forward line right now is Hazard, Sanchez. The question is whether, Mahrez is a consistent starter anymore, which one assumes he will be moving forward.
He is the best player in the Premier League.
Yeah, Payet.
When he plays.
Yeah, so Payet and Mahrez. So it's hard for me to mess with that too much. I mean, Eden Hazard is the obvious choice to go at some point.
Yeah, but that is a big differential for you right now that you've with the really good fixture coming up for him at home.
Yeah. When I have problems with Hazard elsewhere, am I really going to take one of my precious transfers and spend it on getting rid of Hazard at home to Aston Villa? Especially when Hazard has scored 2 goals already in the international break.
Yeah. Troy Deeney is your problem.
I know. His stats are actually okay, too.
Your question is, Les, who are you going to bring in for Aguero? Who are you going to bring in for Troy Deeney?
Yeah, well, it's kind of this, I'll have enough money to bring in 8 to 9 million players. Kane is tempting too, mostly because he looked really good for England yesterday.
Yeah,
and
even though he apparently botched a sitter,
yeah, but
there's still some mental deficiencies happening with him this season.
He had 2 assists yesterday, though.
And frankly, you won your head-to-head in game week 8 thanks to a Harry Kane own goal.
I did. Everything had to break right to win that head-to-head. You know, Gallo is another interesting option. I mean, it feels weird to jump that far down in price from Aguero to Gallo. I mean, I think it would stress me out to have that much money. Like, to go from like 13.3 to a 5.3 player, like, I don't even know what I'd do with that 8 million. Having been so burned with the Deeney thing, I'm really disinclined to bring in a third forward that doesn't cost a lot of money right now.
It's the opposite of the conundrum, too, of how do you get Aguero back in if you...
Yeah, finding 4 million is easy. Finding 8 million is trickier. I think that if your cheap third striker doesn't perform, it will take you forever to get him out of your team.
Yeah.
Because there's almost never a straight swap that makes sense.
So the real button on this, I think, is that the stats show if you don't have Pele now, Pele is the guy to get in for Aguero.
With Lukaku not far behind and Jamie Vardy. Lukaku and Jamie Vardy are the other 2 options.
Yeah.
If you have 2 of those 3 or you're not interested in one of those players, I think that taking a punt on Harry Kane would be interesting. He's down to 9.2 and Tottenham. So they're home to Liverpool, but we don't really know what kind of Liverpool we're going to see in that match. So I would expect there to be goals there. And then they're away to Bournemouth. Home to Aston Villa, away to Arsenal, home to West Ham. So some pretty good fixtures coming up for Kane, too. So I don't know. I think that would be an interesting option. I mean, Costa is, like, so tempting, just given Chelsea's fixtures, given the fact that you have to assume they're going to come back eventually. But it's hard for me to justify spending $11 million on Diego Costa right now. If he were, like, 9.5, I think I would just – it would already be done. He'd be on my team. Or not even 9.5, like 9. You know, just at 11 million, you're really just giving up a lot of money for a player who didn't really show much in the second half of last season. It hasn't shown like anything this year except for one game, away to West Brom.
You want to know something interesting? We've been talking about this for, what, 10, 15 minutes?
And I think like 40.
About 40 minutes. And I've been looking at these stats. I've been taking them in. I've been considering them. And not for a moment during this discussion or the days prior, have I even once considered who I'm going to bring in for Aguero?
Really?
Yeah. I was like, oh, so what is my move? And I was thinking, I have no idea. Actually, I think if I look at this, I was leaning toward Lukaku.
Okay.
And I guess I do have that benefit of already having Pele in my front line.
Could you turn Aguero into Jamie Vardy? And then take that money you save to turn, what's your Leicester midfielder?
Mark Albrighton.
To turn Albrighton into
something special?
I mean, because that'd be very creative.
That's interesting. I'd have to actually do the math on that. we'll try that.
Yeah, we'll pull out a calculator. We'll come back in about 30 minutes.
Actually, let me pull up my team right now. Let me see if I can do this. All right, I'm going to the transfer tab here.
This is like real time.
This is now
become a podcast where I give you advice in real time.
Okay, so I got my team pulled up here. So let's see. Albrighton, bam, you're gone. Though I see you, Andre Ayew. You don't escape me.
Yeah, that's a little nerve-wracking.
And okay. X, Aguero. Put in Vardy. How much do I have in the bank? It can be done. I can turn Mark Albrighton into Kevin De Bruyne.
That is a great that like I think I just gave you. I mean, even at burning 4 points, it's a pretty tempting move.
All right, we'll see. We'll see if I have the same reaction as I did when you challenged me to not make a transfer a couple weeks ago. Okay, so we've looked at a lot of forward stats, and we've considered the options. Another thing that we do have to consider for all of our transfers going into game week 9 is, of course, the fallout from the international break. So my Google Docs grid project to counter yours, Josh, with the strikers, is to look at who traveled, how far, and what happened.
Yeah, I will say, by the way, just to kind of set the tone for this, so I did put together a like a watch list of injured players from the international break. It's kind of incredible, especially when you look at the defenders. I mean, it's just amazing how many defenders are doubts for this weekend.
Yeah.
Kolarov, Company.
Chief among them, yeah.
Eric Dyer, Niam, John Stones, Gomez, Reed, Ward, Lovren. The list goes on from there.
You have to think that Company.
Koscielny.
So you wonder if that status is going to change for Company since he played 60 minutes today.
Yeah. I guess that was agreed upon that he was only going to play 60 before it came off. So, yeah, you would think he might be okay for this weekend. But, you know, you can look at the midfielders, you know, Yaya Toure, David Silva, Coutinho's a doubt, Ayew's a doubt. Obviously, Aguero, Benteke, Son is out for Tottenham. So I think that, you know, I've seen a lot of people on Twitter and elsewhere talk about, what am I going to do? I have all these injured players. And I think you just got to... You got to burn some points, you know, yeah. and just deal with it. I mean, I think that 8 points is the most that I am comfortable with burning myself. You know, yeah. any more than that, and I'm feeling a little anxious. I mean, I'm about to say a contradictory thing here too. Which is that you don't have to feel the full 11. I mean, sometimes it isn't worth it. You know,
fill the five-a-side squad. That'll do. That'll be fine.
But if they're going to come back in a week. It's not always worth the 4 point hit. I mean, if you're talking about someone like Sergio Aguero, yeah, you got to burn the 4 points because you're not getting anything from him from several weeks, and his value is going to be dropping. And there are enough players with strong fixtures this weekend that you could, you know, you have captain options that you could bring in.
You also have to consider all the gamesmanship that goes into injury talk during international break. There are lots of guys that will claim a minor knock to get out of travel or. A lot of playing time, particularly if their squad doesn't have a really important game.
Oh, that's what Nam did. Classic Nyam.
So Nyam. That's so Nyam. So speaking of Belgium players...
Is Nyam Belgian?
No, but we were talking about Company earlier, so that was the leap I was making.
Okay.
And, of course, KDB is high on the watch list if you don't already have him. So, and we've got a lot of big Premier League guys that play on Belgium. From Hazard to Lukaku to Fellaini, Vertonghen, Alderweireld, Mignolet, Company, KDB. They played two games over the break, and they traveled. Sorry for all you UK people. I'm going to speak in miles here. But they traveled a total of 2,743 miles. So you're looking at from the Etihad Stadium to Andorra, where they played their first match. That's 1,128 miles. Then from Andorra to Brussels, that's another 1,170 miles. And back to the Etihad, that puts you up over 2,500 miles. Now, is that a lot? I say no, compared to...
Not so bad. And everyone played pretty well. I mean, Hazard scored a couple of goals. Lukaku, Fellaini.
Yeah, Fellaini got a game in.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And KDB scored... two goals. He scored in both matches, played the full 90 in each. So I guess the concern there would be he played 180 minutes. Is he due for a rest? Well, I sincerely doubt it, given that David Silva came off for Spain with an injury.
I would be shocked if Hazard or Lukaku or really any of the Belgian players didn't play this weekend. Like you said, they didn't travel that far, and there don't seem to be any injury concerns outside of Kompany, of course.
Right. So traveling basically three times as far, Pele, number one on our striker watch list, from St. Mary's to Azerbaijan, where his first break match was, it's close to 3,000 miles. And then from Azerbaijan back to Rome, it's a little over 2,800 miles. And then you're looking at over 1,200 miles back to St. Mary's for a total round trip of 7,071 miles.
Yeah, this is where you being a travel agent really helps us out here, Brandon.
It really does.
How long did it take you to put this together? This is really impressive.
I have to give.
You should post this on the Always Cheating website, by the way. This is interesting to look at.
Yeah, I will have to check the spelling of Azerbaijan before I do post it.
Like on a Madrid uniform, you'll be able to see it there.
Yeah, but Pele is a guy who. He basically has played every minute of every game throughout the history of time. Like, the guy's such a monster that, like, just it doesn't seem to matter
how much playing time he puts in. He did score today, so I think...
Yeah, he scored the game winner.
Yeah.
Another Italian point we have to make is Darmian, Manchester United defender. Also, he scored against Azerbaijan, played in both games.
I'd be very surprised if Shane Long started in place of Pele at home, but it is possible.
Or Rodriguez.
Yeah.
Yeah, I sincerely doubt it as well. Like, Pele is in great form. They have to keep it going. He's kind of a talismanic figure in that squad right now.
Tell me about Alexis.
All right, so I'm sorry, but Google Maps, when I look at directions on Google Maps, Alexis has traveled so far that I can't tell you how many miles it is. I can only tell you how many hours in plane travel.
This actually probably would have been the better way to do all of these, in hindsight.
And I said, well, you get a lot of driving directions if you're too close to the UK.
Oh, I see. Yeah, okay.
And listen, I spent a hell of a lot of time basically just converting kilometers into miles where necessary, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, Alexis, he spent round trip after he travels back to North London from Peru, he will have spent an airtime of 34 hours and 25 minutes.
Yeah, so
going from the Emirates to Santiago, from Chile to Peru, and then back to North London.
Right. So and with the possible hamstring injury, and he is the late game tonight on Tuesday night. So it's a little worrisome. I don't know that it would dissuade if I didn't already own him. I don't know if it would dissuade me from bringing him in. It may make me a little less inclined to captain him because I think there's at least a chance that he wouldn't start. In that Watford game.
Right.
Do you think
he's just a victim of yanking his shorts up too much? That's messing with his groin?
Yeah, I think it probably is, actually.
But it should be noted that he did score a goal in the 90th minute against Brazil. And
I can't believe he played 90 with a bit of a hamstring injury. I mean, I know that guy, like, it's impossible to get him off the field, but I do think I think it makes me a little disinclined to captain him this week. Away to Watford, as well as the fact that Watford have actually defended pretty well at home this season.
Right.
Even against pretty good sides. So I don't know. It's a little bit of a concern, I will say.
Yeah. Now, looking at the English players, despite playing one of their matches at Wembley, they actually traveled slightly farther than our Belgian friends. And I was looking at Jamie Vardy in particular. So if you're traveling from King Power Stadium to Wembley, that's a whopping 97 miles. And then from Wembley all the way to Lithuania, it's more than 1,300 miles. And round trip, it's going to be a total there and back to King Power Stadium, 2,816 miles for big Jamie Vardy.
Yeah. I think one of the takeaways from these England games, too, is how good Ross Barkley looked in both games.
Absolutely. Scored a goal, as did Walcott. Yeah. Sterling. Yeah.
I am definitely looking at ways to bring Barkley in starting in a couple weeks. I don't actually know... I mean, it may be that I end up just turning Hazard into Ross Barkley and taking that money and reinvesting it elsewhere.
I think that's a fantastic idea. I mean,
it is a good one, isn't it?
All right, so Spain, if you are at all interested in fielding the likes of Santi Cazorla, Azpilicueta, or Cesc Fabregas.
David De Gea.
David De Gea as well. David De Gea, probably the tastiest of all these players at the moment. They had a round trip of 4,515 miles. Look, if you're traveling from Stamford Bridge, as Fabregas did, all the way to Logroño, Spain, then over to the Ukraine in beautiful Kiev, and then back to Stamford Bridge, that's more than 4,500 miles.
This is like my brother. My brother called me last night because he is flying to New York for Thanksgiving this year. And this is what happened, was basically me talking to him on the phone, like explaining different, like we were using like two different plane services. And I was like, well, if you take this one, and this is the plane to take about 4.5 hours, is one stopover, and just going through every possible copy, like every permutation you could possibly.
Just trying to gauge his very subtle reaction, like, way over, I'm not sure.
Exactly. Yeah, trying to read between the lines a little bit.
Another interesting European side, though, Tulekic has a lot of Premier League players playing for France this week. And I looked at Kabay traveling from Selhurst Park. He had a round trip of 2,726 miles from Selhurst to Nice, then to Copenhagen, and then back to Selhurst.
I mean, if you had the guts to play a five-man midfield and just have an Agallo-type third striker, you know, Johan Kabay would be a really tempting option. Kabay and Ross Barkley. The problem that I have is that I like to chase forwards, you know. It's you know, once an Aguero type player, you know, performs well, I have to have them on my team, and it's usually pretty hard to have expensive forwards. And I don't know. I mean, I guess you can still often have two expensive forwards. I don't know. It gets a little tricky.
Yeah.
But going with the five-man midfield for the next few weeks is an interesting option, especially given you know, Kabay's form the last couple of weeks, and then. Or Ross Barkley's form, which is also excellent. And as we've brought up a million times, the fixtures get really good for Everton in a couple of weeks.
One of the interesting things about the French games was Olivier Giroud ended up scoring two goals very early on against Armenia. And so he's in a rich vein of form.
Yeah, it's just too risky.
It is too risky. Don't know if he's going to start against Theo Walcott. But other French players, Hugo Lloris played two matches, Bakary Sagna, Morgan Schneiderlin, Sissoko, Martial. Zuma played 45 minutes against Denmark earlier in the week. So lots of players here to look at.
Yeah, the Sanchez one is the one that's the most intriguing to me. The Pele thing is a little... I didn't realize he traveled so far, so that is a little worrisome.
Traveled far, played 180 minutes.
You know, I mean, if he was playing for Sir Alex Ferguson, it'd be a huge concern. This used to be a big thing with Sir Alex,
but that he'd
rest anybody, you know, after a long trip. I mean, you know, after an international break, you'd often see Wayne Rooney not even come off the bench.
It hardly bears mentioning how Argentina fared this week, since Aguero didn't last a full match before his injury. The other two players in play for them for FPL, Otamendi and Zabaleta, both in the Man City defense. Otamendi played 90 minutes in their 0-2 loss to Ecuador.
Right.
Zabaleta was on the bench, didn't get any playing time. And again, they are playing later tonight against Paraguay, so we don't exactly know how it's going to play out there.
And it's still too soon to tell with Kolarov, too, the other Man City fullback who limped off, but is likely to play this weekend. It's as of Tuesday, it's too early to tell what's happening with him.
So look, we've got all this data in front of us. We've considered it all. It's finally time to look at game week 9.
All right, let's do it.
And we now have to predict exactly how it's all going to play out after I finally hit accept on this all Brighton to De Bruyne transfer. Hold on. There we go. Did I do it?
I think it's likely. I can't imagine a better combination. All right, go on.
All right, so let's run through the fixtures here for Game Week 9 real quick to give us a sense of what we're thinking. The first game is the early kickoff, Spurs versus Liverpool. It's going to be Jurgen Klopp's first match in charge, and he's coming up against a pretty unpredictable Tottenham team.
It's a crazy opening match. I mean, right out of the international break, two, you know, kind of lower top, I don't know what you call them, sort of sub Champions League sides, but, you know, right on the cusp. Europa League sides. That's true. Our two Europa League representatives playing together.
And White Hart Lane is hardly a fortress this season. It doesn't really seem to matter where Spurs are playing.
How Eric Dyer will be playing this game. It's a very difficult game to predict. He will not be playing this. Did I say he will? He will not be playing this game.
It's another cookie.
Yeah. Son will not be playing this game either. We don't really know what the Liverpool formation is going to be. I mean, it's not like he's going to bring in 11 new players or anything like that, but it's still a little unclear what the style is going to be.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. It just seems so. I'd be reluctant to bring in any Liverpool players at the moment.
Yeah, Spurs definitely really look more favorable in this match to me.
Yeah.
With Harry Kane getting the playing time for England, he's going to be prepped. He's going to be ready.
I think that if
and
if,
and you have to consider Eriksen.
Yeah,
coming off of a two-goal performance.
That's true. And I think Danny Ings is another interesting player. Not a player I would bring in this week because we don't even know if he's going to start. But if he starts and plays well, then I think Ings would be one to keep on your radar because he's a 7.1 million forward. We know he can score goals. We saw it last year with Burnley. Has already scored two in the last three games for Liverpool. Super cheap. Their fixtures do get better in a couple weeks. So, you know, he'd be one to think about. If it looks like he's going to be central to Klopp's team.
Now, if I actually don't go through with this amazing two transfer that you've suggested, Nathaniel Klein is on the chopping block because I can't be betting on a clean sheet in this fixture.
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking the same thing. Again,
do you still have Martin Skrtel?
So many of the same problems. Yeah, I do. I haven't been able to get rid of him. I was planning to this week. The Aguero thing has thrown everything off kilter. I don't know if I can. I don't know if I can afford to keep a healthy player when I have so much other, so much surgery to do elsewhere. I think Martin Skrtel starts.
So the midday fixtures, starting 10 o'clock Eastern time for us here in New York, we've got Chelsea versus Aston Villa, part one of the two-part epic of Tim Sherwood trying to save his job at Aston Villa. I'm very intrigued by this story about Brendan Rodgers maybe coming in there.
That will be interesting. I mean, Sherwood, I don't think you can quite, put the nail in the coffin for Sherwood. I think he might still be... they might give him a little more time. I mean, he kept him up last year. They performed. I don't know. I mean, I guess they only have one win and a draw, right? So it has been a very poor start. They haven't won since the first week. It seems like they played better than that, doesn't it? Like I was surprised.
It does. They haven't gotten murdered in any match.
Yeah, I mean, it seems a little early, a little premature. I mean, I guess if they really feel like Rodgers is a significantly better manager than Sherwood, which he probably is.
It's a little more respectable.
Yeah. But from a, from a fantasy perspective, Aston Villa's players are kind of worthless right now.
But the real question here is Chelsea and how will they perform? I mean, it was two and a half seasons ago when Chelsea just annihilated Villa, 7 or 8-0.
I think it was the Christmas 10. Break. Yeah. Given recent form, you wouldn't expect that to happen. It's certainly a great fixture for Chelsea. It's the kind of game that, it's been 2 weeks. I mean, doesn't it feel like the last game week was like last season? I don't know why it feels like it's been so long. but I think, I don't know. I think that, I'm actually leaning towards, Captain Hazard in this game.
I wouldn't blame you. I mean, I'm definitely regretting dropping Hazard so quickly because this is a really intriguing matchup.
Yeah.
And if you do have a, I guess Mourinho has come out and he's hinted that Zuma looks like an easy start this game.
Yeah, I don't know. That Chelsea defense, I'm a little... Well, we'll see. I mean, Ivanovic isn't playing anymore, right? So, he's probably out for a couple weeks. So that would probably help. I mean, I know everyone's been snarking about it on Twitter, but it probably will help their defense. I mean...
I would think so.
I mean, God, I mean...
Tadic looked terrible.
Made him look so bad a couple weeks. Tadic and Mane, but made him look terrible in that match. Last weekend.
I think it was Football Cliches mentioned that Tadic move on Ivanovic was basically committing necrophilia. It was.
Yeah. All right. That brings us to Crystal Palace, West Ham. Crystal Palace looked very good the last 2 weeks. They've kept two clean sheets. Will be a challenge, I would think, to keep a clean sheet against West Ham. They have shown ability to score every week in, week out.
Especially away from home.
Pae looks fantastic. Saka looks good. I can see this game as like a 2-2 draw. It'll be interesting to see if Zaha can do what he's done the last couple of weeks, which is just absolutely rampage down the flank and get in the box and create problems and not score. I mean, his ability to get into good positions and not score is like borderline legendary.
But
he's winning penalties. He's getting assists. So, he's someone to keep an eye out for, I guess, because he'd be a pretty cheap fifth midfielder.
And then, speaking of the midfielder differential, we talked about Kabay, and his playing time was managed really well over the break. He didn't play a full 90 in either match, and he's on goal-scoring form. So if you have Kabay, you've got to be playing him in this match.
Absolutely.
Now, what about Payet?
Well, Payet looks great. What's not to love? Scoring or assisting, getting bonus points every week. At his price, he's doing wonders. He's fantastic. Love Payet. And he's short. I root for all the short players.
And it's spectacularly a round head.
That's why I like him and Sandy Cazorla.
All right, a very interesting matchup to follow this. Everton versus Man United, hosted at Goodison Park.
Yep, would love to see Everton win this match. I think it's possible. I mean, I'm really impressed with how they looked against Liverpool. I actually was surprised they didn't win that game. I thought they looked the better team in that game.
Yeah, I was pretty bummed that they didn't, even though I lost a clean sheet. I mean, we both lost. Did you? You didn't even play Skrtel on that match, did you?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, so it was, Lukaku is on form. So it's just a matter of how much faith you have in him to not be dumb, Lukaku.
There's no reason not to have faith in him, I think, too. I mean, he looks like he's finally turned into the player that we all thought he might. He's always had the strength for it. He's got a lot of pace. And he's been scoring against, Everton's fixtures throughout the season have not been very good. Mm-hmm. And he continues to score in those fixtures. And they sort of continue not to be very good the next couple of weeks. But
And despite getting De Gea back, United's defense is a little bit of a question mark.
Yeah.
Losing Luke Shaw, they've been a little shakier. They've lost that vein of clean sheets.
I don't think there's any reason to totally write them off or think that what's happened before is fluky. I mean, Arsenal scored three very good goals. Excellent goals. All three of them were great against Man United. And Man United looked pretty good in the second half. Anthony Martial was, maybe after Alexis Sanchez, the most – well, okay. I mean, certainly he was the most dangerous player on the pitch for Man United.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would start all my mids and forwards from these two teams in this game.
Right. Okay, so then Manchester City hosts Bournemouth.
Yeah, but we'll see. We'll see if Kolarov plays. We'll see if Yaya Toure plays.
Geez, so many question marks here. Basically, it's just KDB or nothing. Raheem Sterling is a very interesting prospect here.
Yeah, he is an interesting prospect. I'm still, it's hard for me not to get out, to look past my Sterling bias in this game, just because I did have him early on and it really did not work out well. While everyone around him was scoring and assisting. those first few weeks from Man City. I think he's an interesting option. I don't know that I like him without the rest of the team. I think that...
Right, he's just sort of a bit player at this point.
Seems like Boney would be more capable of creating a goal out of nothing than Sterling would.
Right.
Especially because Sterling is not always the greatest, his ability to consistently score goals is still a bit of a question mark.
Okay, man, these midday fixtures continue to roll on. There are six of them total. Yeah. And next we got Southampton, Leicester City.
I was tempted to bring in a Southampton defender, but it does seem like Leicester, much like West Ham, is showing an ability to score week in and week out.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely would expect Mahrez to come back for this game. I mean, the quotes afterwards, were basically that, we just the way they defend wide, we just thought that he wouldn't have much of an advantage, and it was a chance to give him a break. And recover from any nagging injuries and whatever. So I think that Mahrez does start. I don't know. This game I could see this game being like a 2-2 game or a 3-2 game. Are you thinking about captaining Pelé in this game?
I was thinking of captaining Robert Huth.
Yeah, Huth. Just go for it. Hoof it up.
You have to consider it, given he's the most on-form striker right now, and he's been very consistent in delivering points, but he's
7,000 miles, or that's lingering in the back of my head now.
Isn't it? Don't you love that stat? He's just not an explosive player.
Yeah.
And he's looking for that yellow card. I mean, you could hope for a goal and assist, which would be a good haul.
Yeah.
But it's very difficult to armband him because of that. You're never going to expect him to get a hat trick.
Yeah, that's true. So yeah, interesting match. And Mane still. It's weird how there hasn't been a rush to pick him up. I guess it's just because so many midfielders are performing so well.
Yeah, there are too many options. I was so impressed with him against Chelsea, how he didn't mentally collapse after the whole debacle of him getting the yellow card for diving after he should have gotten a clear penalty, not a couple minutes prior to.
Yeah, he is an incredible differential option right now. I mean, everyone's going to Pale, everyone's going to Lukaku, everyone's picking up De Bruyne. You know, I think that there's still a lot of edge to be gained in picking up Mane. I don't actually know if I'm going to be able to do it myself, but I wish I could.
Yeah, I mean, other guys that could play up front and get in a rotation would be J. Rodriguez, or we didn't even mention Shane Long and his spectacular goal against Germany in the Euro Cup qualifiers.
He just doesn't consistently score, or doesn't, you know, he's too much of a starter risk to bring
in. Yeah. All right, so the last midday fixture here on Saturday, West Brom v. Sunderland.
Yeah, we'll see if West Brom picks it up a little bit. They have not looked good the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, lots of mental breakdowns there.
Have not been keeping clean sheets.
Yeah.
I actually think that Sunderland could end up winning this game. First game with Allardyce. Haven't won a game all season. I just wonder if maybe this is when it finally happens for them. You know, I don't know. I mean, they're not devoid of talent. And, you know, I'm not sure that West Brom could really prepare for the Sunderland. I'm not sure that, you know, you don't even know who's going to be starting for that Sunderland team, right? Does Fab Barini start up front? Is it Defoe?
That is true. You can't prepare for who's going to start. But
certainly
by all accounts, that the team is just a complete shit show over there at Sunderland.
No, I agree. But if I had a West Brom defender, I'd be a little worried right now.
Well,
but neither of us have them, so it's no problem, right?
No, I do. I have Craig Dawson.
No, I'm just kidding. I know.
I mean, if you had Johnny Evans, you might be a little concerned because he's probably out on injury.
Johnny Evans, he's Mr. Glass. You know, you can't bring in Johnny Evans. It's just too risky.
I don't know. I feel like this is one of the better clean sheet bets.
Oh, I agree. I mean, certainly by all accounts it is. I just, my gut instinct is that Sunderland.
You're being pessimistic.
Score a couple goals in this game.
All right, last kickoff of the day on Saturday. Watford is hosting Arsenal, which, should be a tough match for Arsenal. And Watford is hard to give up a goal in the first half this season so far. They play it really tight in the back.
Yep, and it'll be interesting to see how Sanchez does tonight. If he plays well, scores a goal. I think he's kind of maybe the clear captain choice for this weekend, even given the way Watford have looked at home.
Yeah.
And I know this contradicts what I was saying earlier about how much he travels, but if he looks good and the guy is in incredible form right now. I mean, you know, next to Aguero, he's been the best player in the Premier League the last couple of weeks, maybe even better than Aguero, really.
Josh, 34 hours, 25 minutes. Can you imagine how many movies Alexis will have watched by the time he gets back to the Emirates?
Have you seen Alexis Sanchez? That guy is he's born to be a soccer player, a football player.
Yeah, I mean, the question for tonight is, does he play with his shorts pulled up all the way over his head? So we'll find out.
Yeah. All right, that brings us to Sunday. We've got Norwich, Newcastle. This is, okay, here's my prediction. It's a 1-0 game, and McLaren is fired at the end of the game. I don't mean as the game ticks down, but after the match is over.
So who's it going to be? Is it going to be Houlihan? Is it going to be Cameron Jerome?
No, George R. R. Russell Martin.
Yes, he dances with the dragons. He's in here.
Yeah, it'll be a 15-pointer for Martin.
I get so excited the weeks where I actually get to willingly start Russell Martin.
Yeah, I'm starting Martin too.
I'm getting a little giddy just thinking about it. Mm. Though Mitrovic was one of the few players to not get red carded for Serbia over the break.
Yeah, and this was actually I couldn't really find a way to fit it in earlier in the podcast, but I'm actually kind of interested in at least keeping an eye on this Newcastle team. We might have to wait until McLaren gets fired for it to really think about bringing in other players because they just look so,
Well, yeah, you were writing a love letter to Ayoze Perez.
Well, he was an option before the Aguero thing happened. So, I mean, the next six fixtures are, I mean, so they're home to Norwich, away to Sunderland, home to Stoke, away to Bournemouth, home to Leicester, away to Crystal Palace. Certainly, if any of their midfielders or forwards was showing an inclination to score, It would be very tempting to bring one of them in because they are so inexpensive.
Yeah. Okay, and our final kickoff of the weekend is actually on Monday. Midday Monday fixture, Swansea versus Stoke City. And this is the only reason why Tim Gomes actually persists on my squad. Because Stoke has been tough to keep a clean sheet this season so far. He does stand a chance.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, Brandon.
He could ghost from your team?
No, he's going to be on the team. I actually have a bit of a goalkeeping dilemma this weekend because I have Jack Butland and Schmeichel. So okay. Do you go with the Leicester keeper on the road to Southampton, or do you go with the Stoke keeper on the road to Swansea?
Interesting. I'd go for save points with Butland.
Yeah, I think so too, although there probably will be save points in both games. Yeah, I can already see myself bringing in Pelé, captaining him, and then having a penalty come up and having him take the penalty and have it saved by Schmeichel. And I just have this like whirlwind of emotions. Like, I don't know how to feel about it. You know, the thing where you're like, well, this hurts me, but it could hurt other people more. And so the other points over here help me too.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So I
could. Well, I'll say this in defense of Jack Butland. Swansea have been hardly prolific the last few weeks, and a lot of that offense has been running through the midfield.
Yeah.
Sigurdsson has been traveling with Iceland. Yeah, I don't know the miles. Sorry, guys. And AU is a bit of a doubt coming off of a knock.
Well, Iceland just played in Turkey today, right? So that's a bit of a hike.
It is, yeah. And there's all sorts of crazy stuff happening in Turkey right now. So I don't know how to feel about that. So, you know, that there is an opportunity for a clean sheet, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
There's a chance.
Yeah, I think there's a chance. This game to me is it has 1-1 all over it, though. The classic Monday night 1-1-er. Is that a classic thing? I made it sound like it was a classic thing. That seems about right, doesn't it?
Well,
I feel like most Monday night games are boring 1-1 games.
Yeah, and you kind of hope for this, and they're the most memorable because it knows us being on Eastern Standard Time, it means we can not worry about it while we're at work. We can actually do work instead of slacking off to pay attention to the game.
That's true. It's been a while since it was a really good Monday afternoon game, like one where I could invent a dentist appointment or something to go watch.
All right, well, I'll be happy to have the Premier League back this weekend. I wish you good luck, Josh.
Yeah, thanks, Brennan. And we'll be talking about the games on Twitter and elsewhere this weekend. So yeah,
follow come us find at us at Hail Cheaters.
Yeah, and join the league.
Yeah, it's never too late to join the league. The link there is on our Twitter account. Go to alwayscheating.com. And, of course, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. We're also on Stitcher Radio. And you can find us on SoundCloud, where you can leave comments on the podcast. And you'd leave us a review on iTunes or whatever. That's always much appreciated.
All right, Brandon. Well, I will. Good luck this weekend.
Yeah, thanks. You too.
Yeah, hail cheaters.
Poku forever.